This is a Dragon Blazer production.
This is Unsolved Comedy.
Hello, guys,
and welcome back to Unsolved Comedies.
As always, I am your host, Kizaya, and we have
a bloody man at Bojangles.
Bojangles guy over here, guys.
Stephen.
It's Stephen. So, if you guys caught the last episode, we recorded for a super long time unintentionally, and we're now cutting the episode in half. Yay! So, when we left off, we had just gotten done talking about Regina Meeks and, the parents reporting their children missing. And now, we're gonna start talking about Terry Hobbs. After I've told you everything that I've told you about Terry Hobbs, I know that they haven't listened to it, but what do you think about Terry Hobbs, just real quick?
He seems like a douchebag.
I love how you, like, said that. I don't know.
But let's let the listeners.
Oh, yeah. You guys need to decide for us. Opinion. And this episode will also put in two for you. Jason Baldwin, Jesse Miss Kelly, and Damian Eccles. And those are the West Memphis 3 that we're talking about when we talk about the West Memphis 3 case. Because they were, I think, wrongfully convicted. So you'll get some background in them. And we'll let you guys get right into it. So now let's talk about Terry Hobbs. This motherfucker. Okay. Terry Hobbs.
This sounds like a very unbiased view.
Listen, I have reason to believe that Terry Hobbs murdered those three boys. And reason to believe that Terry Hobbs... Like, literally, like, there's... I remember reading this. I don't remember where I read it at. I think it was maybe in the West of Memphis movie, which is another movie that was made about the case. It was either in West of Memphis or Paradise Lost. But in West of Memphis or Paradise Lost, it's mentioned that when the cops interviewed some of the family members of Stevie Branch, they said that he was really scared of Terry. Like, really scared of Terry. Like, he's 8 years old, you know. 8 years old get really excited playing and sometimes they have accidents. Well, Stevie would have accidents and then he would go hide in a closet. And his grandmother remembers this. And his grandma was like, why are you hiding in the closet? Let's get you cleaned up, you know. Nothing to be ashamed of. It happens to everybody type of thing. Like, trying to be supportive. And he was like, Papa Terry's gonna beat me for this. Like, it was bad. And, like, I can't even remember all of it. But, like, I remember that sticking out to me. Like, I didn't have a lot of accidents when I was a child, but I remember, like, family members of mine having them when they were, like, between the ages of 6 and 8. And it wasn't really something that they got spanked over. Like, you know, they might get put in time out after they got cleaned up and, you know, put in the shower and put in clean clothes. And then they would get put in time out. You know, hey, you need to pay more attention. You know, you're 8 years old. You need to pay more attention when you have to go potty type of deal.
I mean, Everybody disciplines differently, and...
I know that, like, my parents and the people that I was around that had children, they never spanked for that kind of thing because they're kids. Like, adults piss themselves on a regular. Like, I've literally seen adults piss themselves at grocery stores before.
Literally witnessed this often?
Not often, but I literally, like, I remember, like, I was, like, 14, and I saw this chick, like... just pissing herself outside of a Walmart. And I was like, okay.
Walmart is not the best place to be judging who pisses themselves.
Good point. And, like, not to mention, like, I work in retail, guys, and my best friend literally found jeans soaked in piss before. Like, pants that somebody tried on and had an accident while they were
Well, maybe if they would have got their ass smacked as a child.
No, I'm just saying.
Wouldn't have done
it's
that.
It's not really something that I've, like, and I, you know, I've never met anybody that spanks for that kind of thing. Like, or let alone that the kid's, like, so scared that he goes and hides in a closet and he's like, Papa Terry's gonna beat me for this. I'm gonna get a spanking for this. He's gonna beat me for this. Like, that it was scary enough for him to go hide in a closet.
I mean, spanking is.
I think spanking kids is good.
Kids aren't a fan of being spanked, so.
I think spanking can be good if it's used the right way. Like, I was always raised, you get three chances. And if you break those three chances, then you get spanked. But this isn't a three chances type of situation. The kid had an accident.
Yeah, but not everybody does that situation. I mean.
Did you? Okay. You have three kids. Two of which you're completely potty trained. Did you ever spank either of you, your two children for having accidents? Is that ever something that you did?
No, I didn't. But I'm okay. I'm not that type of parent.
It's not something common, is what I'm saying. And, like, the way that the family spoke about Terry Hobbs was that Stevie was very afraid of him. Like, Terry called Stevie frog legs. I don't have any proof of this. This came from Stephanie's video. But he called Stevie frog legs. Like, who calls their stepson frog legs? Like, that's not a very endearing
term. I mean, I don't
really
understand the nickname. I'm sure there was a reason he called him that.
I don't know. I just, it to me, like,
maybe he jumped around offensive. A lot.
I don't know. I don't know.
He was, jump around. Jump around. Nope, maybe. I'm just checking.
Okay. Like I said, I don't know. I get off vibes from Terry Hobbs, and like I said, I have reason to believe that he murdered these boys, so I'm not very...
I mean, this is the first time I've heard this story in this case, so...
This is information that we'll probably get in the next episode, and the next episode we'll have the court case and the aftermath. You guys are getting two episodes this week. You guys are hella spoiled. How do y'all feel? But Terry Hobbs was never questioned. He was never looked at. He was never asked for DNA, and he was never asked for an alibi. The other two fathers were. And Terry Hobbs, who is the only stepfather, like, he's literally a stepfather. He's not like Chris Byers' father, who literally raised him from a baby. Like, he knew his dad, and he would go around his dad. That's why he called Terry Papa Terry, because he already had a dad. Type situation.
I mean, I was a stepfather. Why you gotta be like that?
No, I'm just saying he was a bad stepfather. That's what I'm saying, is that he was a bad stepfather. There's a reason I call John Mark Byers Chris's father, and then make the distinction that Terry Hobbs was Stevie's stepfather.
See, I feel
because
like...
they behaved extremely differently. Terry didn't raise Stevie like he was his own. He treated Stevie like shit. Like, according to Pam, he would get really jealous. Like, he honestly reminds me of whoever the fuck that guy was that killed Patrice. That guy.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm sorry. Allegedly killed Patrice.
You just really have a problem with bad parenting. You're a bad parent. I automatically assume you murdered this person.
Well, here's the thing. He would get jealous because Pam would, like, if Stevie got scared in the middle of the night, Pam would go lay with him and, like, or let him, or she would lay in bed with him or let him snuggle her or whatever. Typical things for a little boy to do. Like, my cousin was, like, 16 to 18 and was still, like, laying up on his mom. I was, like, fucking mama's boy, and he was like, yeah, what the fuck ever. Like,
that's, I mean, that's more common than you think.
I know
it
is.
Not saying it's right, but that's...
I don't believe in being jealous of a child, because the attention that the child is getting and the attention that you want are two completely different types of attention.
Just because you don't believe in it doesn't mean it's not
a thing. I think it's wrong.
You can think it's wrong. That's fine. Think it's wrong.
And we're not going to start this argument, guys, because if we do, we'll argue for the next an hour and a half.
I'm not saying it's not wrong, but I'm saying it's common.
It's common, but
it's
wrong.
It's not exactly something that doesn't happen.
Whenever there's a missing persons case or a murder, and I hear that, it's a red flag. Like, I'm sorry, but it's a red flag. Anyway, Terry Hobbs says that he looks for Stevie after dropping Pam off at work. And his alibi is his only alibi is a man named David Jacoby, who I'll just call Jacoby from now on, because it's easier.
Than David?
Terry and Jacoby worked together. Terry was like an ice cream repairman. I really don't know what the deal was. He went to work very early in the morning and came home early in the afternoon. So Terry drops Pam off at work.
First shift.
Yeah. Well, Terry drops Pam off at work and goes to Jacoby's house. And from what I understand, I heard this from Stephanie, and I heard this also in Terry's interview that he finally gave to the police after he tried to sue the singer of the Dixie Chicks for defamation of character.
What?
Pardon? Pardon? Yeah, we'll talk about that later, too. It's all bad. It's all bad. It's all bad.
He was the Earl in Goodbye Earl. Is now my prediction. Earl's gotta die.
Maybe. So he goes to Jacoby's house, and apparently he takes Amanda with him. And according to Terry, I did watch, like I said, I watched Stephanie's video, and she gives David Jacoby's statement as well, and they're different. So I'm going to tell you both of them, and then you tell me who you think is lying. So David Jacoby's statement is that between 5 and 6, Terry shows up with Amanda, and they play guitar for like an hour. Like, they play guitar for a while. Terry's trying to learn this new song, and it was a deal. They played guitar for like an hour. And I don't know about you, but like, if my stepson's missing, I'm not going to play guitar with somebody for an hour. I'm going to be freaking out.
Did he know that his stepson was missing at this time?
At this point, Stevie should have been home at 4:30 to be home so that Pam could go to work. And according to Terry, he has not seen Stevie at this point. So, if it were me, I'd be freaking out. I'd be freaking out because my son hasn't been home. He was told...
What time was this?
This was... he says between 5 and 6. I'm going to say more towards 6 because he did have to drop Pam off at work first.
So, and the kids were supposed to be back by 4:30. I mean, kids are late.
Kids
are little shits.
At this point, like, let's...
Sometimes...
So let's say that, you know, yeah, you're right, he's late, but Terry shows up, like, John Mark Byers had a very, and this is where I say that I see a distinction. John Mark Byers and Dana Moore were ready to report their kids missing as soon as they realized that their kids weren't just late, because they had a time that they were supposed to come home.
Yeah, but...
So within an hour of the kids not being home at that time, like, Pam was freaking out. Pam, before she went to work, was freaking out that Stevie wasn't home and that he couldn't be found because apparently he was good about being home on time. Do I think that Stevie was murdered before Pam went to work? No, I think Stevie was... Let's not talk about theories yet. I'm not going to tell you what I think. I just, it's suspicious. That's all. Little sus.
I'm just pointing out just a little bit there that...
You're just playing devil's advocate, and
no,
I get it.
No, it's not... Well, yeah, I guess I am. But when it comes to that, you know, kids are late, and some people freak out right away. But some people realize that, you know, sometimes kids are doing shit.
This is towards 6 o'clock. And he also lied to police. We'll talk about that, too. I'm going to give you Jacoby's statement first.
Well, I'm going in blind. I don't know what all
know,
he's done later.
I know,
but.
I know. So he plays guitar with David for about an hour and doesn't mention Stevie at all until David Jacoby says, "Hey, where's Stevie? Normally when you come over like this, Stevie's with you. Where's Stevie?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, my son's been missing since, like, 4:30. Maybe I should go out and look for him." That's what he says. Maybe I should go out and look for him. So he leaves Amanda with David Jacoby, and he goes out and drives around, or he goes home to check if Stevie's there, and he's not there. So he comes back, and he's like, Stevie's not at home. Can you come out and, like, drive around with me or walk around with me to look for Stevie? And Jacoby's like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, why wouldn't I? So he goes out, and they drive around, I think, for, like, it was a really short time. It was between 15 and 45 minutes. It was not long. They drive around for this short period of time, and then Terry's like, hey, I'm going to go home and change. You go, and I'll drop you off at home, and you go change. And then we'll search the woods, right? According to David Jacoby, he took Amanda with him when he left that night to go change, and he never came back. Never came back. Jacoby ended up going out to the woods to look for Stevie himself because he was concerned. Hmm. Terry's story is that, now let me just make sure I have Jacoby's statement right. Yes, okay. Jacoby says that he was never in the woods with Terry Hobbs that night, ever. He did go look by himself, but to his knowledge, he said, unless Terry Hobbs went to the woods without me and was looking for the boys, and we were in the woods at the same time, and I didn't know about it, he was like, I can't corroborate his alibi because I wasn't with him, is what he was basically saying. This guy's lying to you. Because Terry Hobbs told the cops that as soon as he dropped Pam off at work, he went over to David Jacoby's and told them immediately that Stevie was missing and asked that Jacoby's wife watch Amanda while they go out and drive around and look for Stevie, right? And that he was never by himself that night. He was always with Amanda or Jacoby the whole night long. And that's his story. He says that he went back to the house to get changed with Amanda and then brought Amanda back to Jacoby's house to have her babysat by Jacoby's wife, and then him and Jacoby went out to the woods together. And Jacoby says that that never happened. So if you had to take one of those stories as the truth, whose story are you taking as the truth?
I mean, I know who you think I should be picking, but I mean, I don't know much about these guys other than what you've told me. But,
well, and keep in mind that this alibi isn't given until, like, years later. Like, this happened in 93, and this alibi wasn't given until, like, the 2000s, when the cops finally realized that they had never really questioned Terry and he could really be a suspect. So this alibi was given, like, at a crazy weird time, and Jacoby was like, I don't know what this guy told you, but it's bullshit. This is what happened.
It's weird that they didn't really question him right off the bat, because everybody goes after the fathers or the...
They questioned the other two fathers, and in fact, John Mark Byers was the focus of the second Paradise Lost movie, and I think like half of the first Paradise Lost movie, as the guy who actually did it. And then at some point, John Mark Byers, like, looked into the information on Terry Hobbs and talked to Pam Hobbs some more and, like, actually spoke to Damien. Like, I don't know if he went to go see him in jail or if he called him or wrote letters to him. I really don't know. But at some point, he spoke to Damien and decided that... And Damien apologized for accusing him. He was like, we did the same thing to you that they did to us, and it was wrong, and they apologized. And Chris Byers' father, John Mark Byers, to this day, believes that Damien is innocent, and that Jason Baldwin and Jesse Miss Kelly are innocent, and that Terry Hobbs killed his son.
Which one was Damien?
Damien, we'll talk a little bit more about Damien, but Damien is the one that ended up on death row.
Yeah, I know. Who is he to these kids?
Nobody. Fucking nobody.
Well, you're talking about a guy that you haven't explained yet.
He's one of the convicted, one of the three wrongfully convicted men.
I
like I said, he's nothing to these boys. Like, I can't even explain it to you. Like, it's so weird. That's why I said I'm doing it in two separate parts. We're talking about the boys, and then we're going to talk about the wrongfully convicted people.
Well, I know, but you're saying names and not explaining who these names are.
I'm saying these names so that when I mention Damien and explain who Damien is and explain who James and Jesse are, I want you to start connecting the dots when I'm talking about them later. So I'm just putting these ideas in your head, that's all.
I'm just saying that nobody knows who these people are if they don't
know anything about this case. If people are watching a West Memphis 3 podcast, most likely they know about the case.
No, every time I listen to a podcast,
the reason I say this, and let me just straight tell you, the reason I say that is because this case is fucking high profile as shit. And I'm not just saying that. And I understand that you've never heard of it. I get it. But this case also happened when you were 10 years old, right?
And my mom weren't born.
No, I wasn't born. But my mom was. My mom was... If my mom had me when she was 22 in 1999, 6 years before that, my mom would have been... 16, 17, yeah. And she said that she remembers the case vividly. She, like, I called her when I was doing research for this case, and because she doesn't watch or listen to our podcast, but she's always wondering what our next case is. And she was like, hey, what's your case for this week? And I was like, it's the West Memphis 3 case. And she was like, that case is total fucking bullshit. And I was like, you know about this case? And she was like, fuck yeah, I know about this case. They did the same thing to those boys that they had been doing. And I'm going to put some race in here a little bit. Sorry. But my mom's a black woman. And she said they did the same thing to those three boys. Because they were boys at the time. They were... The youngest one was 16 and the oldest one was 18. She was like, they did the same thing to those three boys that they've been doing to black men for years.
No, I...
So it's a high profile case. That's all I'm saying is no.
That it's a high profile case, but if we're gonna do a story on our podcast to something that
I get what you're saying, but the reason that I'm doing this the way that I'm doing this is so that you and the people at home can connect the dots when they hear the name later. When I say now we're gonna talk about Damien Echols, they're like, Damien, I heard that name earlier. Let's listen to what this guy is and what has happened to this man. And then we can connect it to what I heard about him earlier. That's the way I like to listen to podcasts. I don't know if you guys like to listen to podcasts that way, but that's the way I like to listen to podcasts, is to have little bits and pieces that I can connect on my own later. It makes me feel like a little investigator, and I'm like, it's fun. I like it.
Alright.
If you guys don't like it, feel free to tell me on our Instagram page.
I was assuming it was one of the kids' dads or something, and I didn't know.
I gave you all the names of the kids' dads.
Yeah, I didn't remember. That's why I asked you who Damien was.
No. So, there's lots of people searching at this time. I never finished Terry Hobbs' statement, did I? Terry Hobbs... Oh, yeah, I did finish his statement. He claims to be with either his young daughter, Amanda, who later on, Amanda accuses him of sexual abuse.
Oh. This story this guy just got so much better.
So, this guy, bad guy. Terry Hobbs, bad guy. Hate him.
Heard.
Hate him. Like, literally. And, like, we'll talk more about it a little bit later, but this guy literally sued the lead singer of the Dixie Chicks because she supported the West Memphis 3. And when people talk about the West Memphis 3, they're talking about the wrongfully convicted boys. So she was in support of the West Memphis 3. And she said, I think that Terry Hobbs did it because he was never formally interviewed and we don't have any proof that he didn't do it, right? She said something like that. And Terry Hobbs sued her. He was like, I'm going to sue the singer of the Dixie Chicks. And he sued her. And then lost the case and had to pay her fucking lawyer fees. Can you imagine how expensive the singer of the Dixie Chicks lawyer fees are?
Yeah.
Like, I bet you that had to hurt. That had to sting.
I mean, if you believe if you're claiming to be innocent, I would be pretty upset if someone was accusing me of murdering these 3 8-year-old boys. Allegedly.
So there's lots of people searching in Robin Hood Hills, but there is no police presence. And I mentioned this before, bad police work. The police dropped the fucking ball on this one. Like, everybody wants to blame the West Memphis Three, the wrongfully convicted boys. What about the police? The police that did a horrible fucking job at their job. Literally, like, and here in Ohio, which is where we're at right now, in Ohio, if a kid goes missing, there's search and rescue, police presence at the search and rescue, and then on top of that, they issue an Amber Alert and an APB right away if they have a car. None of those things happened. And this was in the 90s, and I believe, if I'm not wrong, sometime in the 80s, there was a law passed that called the Johnny Gosh law or something like that, where you didn't have to wait 24 hours to report your child missing. So they should have jumped on this like it was a real missing child, but they didn't. They dropped the ball. They're assholes. Bad cops. and like I said, I don't know. I just like, I'll give cops credit where credit's due, and I will give cops credit later on in this story, but I feel like the cops on this initial first day could have done more. Like Regina Meeks. Fucking Regina Meeks. Done. So there's no police presence, except for a couple of cops that John Mark Byers was out looking in the woods with all these people, right? And he never saw Terry Hobbs either, so it's not like Terry Hobbs was just out looking in the woods by himself. There was a whole presence of people, right? And John Mark Byers says he never saw Terry Hobbs. So John Mark Byers is out looking for his son, and the only cops that are there are a couple of cops that asked John Mark Byers what he was doing. And he was like, I'm looking for my son. And these two other boys, they're 8 years old, they're missing. And the cop was like, wow, really? Let me go grab a flashlight and help you, bud. Like, bad cops. I also forgot to mention that Terry Hobbs didn't report Stevie missing until, let me see if I can find it. Actually, it doesn't have a time. He picked Pam up from work and went into the restaurant that she worked at to use the payphone to make his statement over the phone. Like, Regina Meeks didn't come to the house that night. The statement was taken over the phone. And then some cops came to talk to Pam the next day. Or after the boys were found, some cops came to talk to Pam. I really don't know exactly what happened. But Terry waited a long time to report his stepson missing. So at some point, around midnight, everybody's like, listen, we're not finding anything. We're not finding the boys. We're not finding any evidence that they were even in these woods. Let's go home, regroup. Everybody can get some rest. I mean, I'm sure the parents aren't going to be resting that night.
I mean,
but the people that are helping with the search and rescue are probably like, let's go home, get some rest, and then we'll come back out tomorrow, right? At daylight, when we can see. Because all of this searching is going on in the middle of the night with no light except for flashlights and the moon to help them see. You have 8-year-olds
missing.
Yeah, literally.
Missing. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, to be completely fair, I get where they're coming from. At this point,
you have third shift, go do their job.
Exactly. First of all, cops. But these people that are just, like, townspeople helping with the search and rescue, like, I get where they're coming from. They can't see anything. They've got one fucking cop and probably a handful of flashlights, and they're just walking around in the dark, yelling these boys' name, one after the other, over and over and over again. They're probably frustrated. They're probably discouraged. They're like, let's just go home. Let's regroup. We'll come back out tomorrow, right? We'll come back out tomorrow. And they do. Everybody goes home, gets some rest, right? The next morning, Gary Gitchell, who we'll talk a little bit more about later, asshole, fucking asshole, he heads the case. He is in charge of the case, head detective, I think. And that's when the large search starts with actually police this time. Also, early that morning, like literally daybreak, Chris Byers' father, John Mark Byers, gets a knock on the door. He jumps out of his chair. He said he couldn't sleep that night. He literally just sat in a chair staring at the door.
Don't blame him.
Waiting for his son. And so at like 5 or 6 a.m., he gets a knock on his door, and he jumps out of the chair, runs over, and rushes to open the door because he thinks it's Chris. And it's Terry and Stevie's grandfather that we already talked about. I think his name was Jackie Hicks. He came from where he lived to help search for Stevie and Todd Moore. They're all there. They're like, hey, let's go look for our kids. And they actually, I think they get stopped. Like, I don't think the parents were actually allowed to help look this time because the police presence was there. And so they took the family out of the equation so that if, God forbid, they did find these boys dead, which is exactly what happened, the family wouldn't have to see that, you know? So I think they took the family out of the equation. I could be wrong about that. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think that's what happened. So the boys, the first thing that sparks interest is a guy named Steve Jones. He sees a black laceless tennis shoe floating in the creek. Let me see. I really want to see if I can find a picture of Robin Hood Hills to show you. So that I can show you, like, what this creek looks like. Because it's super shallow. So here's a picture of the creek. This is, I think, actually very similar to what the creek looked like when the bodies and the bikes were found.
That's a pipe bridge?
That's the pipe bridge that the boys would have crossed. So, that's the kind of creek we're talking about. Little baby creek. And kids are known to swim in that creek as well. So, not anymore. Like, I don't remember what his name is, but the guy that I got all that information about the Belvedere Hotel in the first episode, that same guy actually went to the Robin Hood Hills. And when you look at it now, it's, like, overgrown. It's just, it's not the same place. It's not. Like, you can't even see the creek anymore. Bad. So the boys, they see the shoe, and then somebody's like, shit, we gotta go in that water, don't we? You know, obviously we see the shoe floating. We gotta go in that water. And the water is about 3 feet deep at the time, and a guy has to get on his hands and knees and crawl through the water. And he said that he felt something when he was crawling. And he grabbed it and he pulled it up. And I think that Michael Moore was the first one found. So it was Michael Moore. And he picks him up and he puts him on the side of the creek. And the boys are anchored to the bottom of the creek with sticks and they're tied up. And they are, all three of them are naked. The next one to be found was Stevie, and Stevie, and Chris were very close together, so I think they were pulled out maybe at the same time. And they were tied up, like I said, they were naked, but they were tied up, and lots of people say that they were hog-tied, but they weren't hog-tied, because typically when you're hog-tied, it's like diagonal, so this hand, your right hand is tied to your left foot, and vice versa. But they were actually tied, like, their right hand. They were tied, like, I don't even know how to describe it. They looked like rocking horses. Their hands, their right hand was tied to their right ankle, and their left hand was tied to their left ankle, and they were tied behind their back. So they were, like, pushed out like that.
Jeez.
So boys are found, and I feel horrible for the man who, for the cop who did his job and did a good job and went into this river and pulled three dead boys' bodies out. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I would just be completely emotionally destroyed at that point. Like, I'd quit my job.
I quit the force.
Sorry, yeah. Guys. Three dead boys was enough for me.
I'm done.
So, let's talk about what the boys looked like when they're pulled out of the water. Michael Moore looks severely beaten, as does Stevie Branch looks severely beaten. They have cuts all over them, which were later discovered to be animal bites, and we'll talk about that more in the case. Like, they were claw marks from the body, from animals, like snapping turtles, pulling the bodies closer to them so they could feed off of them. And then Chris Byers is also looks beaten, but he's also been castrated.
What?
Mm-hmm. That's why I said...
Oh, jeez.
Chris Byers was found the worst. He... This poor little boy, like... And it is said in the case, like I said, we'll talk about the court hearing later, but a snapping turtle ate his... But it was a snapping turtle. He wasn't castrated with a knife. Oh. It was a snapping turtle that...
It just...
ate that part of him. I hate to say it like that, but he wasn't actually castrated. Like, when you say castrated...
So when he was murdered, he didn't...
No, they didn't take his...
I mean, not that this is much better, but no. At least he wasn't...
He wasn't castrated when he was murdered. The same way that Stevie and Michael have cuts on their bodies from animals pulling the bodies closer to them, Chris Byers, unfortunately, happened to fall victim to a snapping turtle or another carnivorous animal that just happened to eat that part of him, because he had the same part, the same marks, the cuts and everything on his body as well. So what we assume is, we assume that they're beaten, because animals don't beat dead bodies. We assume that they were beaten pre-mortem, and then we assume that animals were feeding on the bodies post-mortem.
Gotcha.
Still not great. Pam Hobbs has a gut-wrenching reaction. Like, I remember when I was watching the Paradise Lost movie. Like I said, it's been a while since I've watched it, but when you watch it, like, I don't know, like, there were lots of press and things there, and they record her. Like, she fell to the ground, and it almost looked like she was having a seizure, and she was just screaming and screaming and screaming. And I can only imagine that that's because, like, her heart was ripped out. Her son was found dead in a creek in the woods, naked, tied up. You know, I just imagine that, like, that was the only sound that her body could produce at that time. And it was horrible. Like, literally, like, just the scream made me cry when I was watching the Paradise Lost episodes. Like, I cried when I saw the dead bodies, and then I kind of composed myself because they were showing you, like, the bikes that were found on either side of the pipe bridge. You know, they weren't talking about the death anymore. And then, like, you see Pam Hobbs' reaction. Like, she falls to the ground. Like, Terry Hobbs has to grab her so that she doesn't hit the ground hard. And then she, like, starts shaking and screaming, and it's awful. The one thing I do want to bring up is what is called the Satanic Panic, because that's going to have a lot to do with the case later on. The Satanic Panic was basically this period of time, specifically in the Bible Belt in the United States, where they were terrified that any crime was the result of a satanic cult, right? You know?
Yeah.
You gotta think, like, in 1969, the Manson family murders happened, and that destroyed the 60s, ended the 60s, free love, no, it was over, because of the Manson family murders. And then, I think in the 70s, Anton LaVey wrote the Satanic Bible, and then... You know, it was just like there had been a lot of horrible things that happened. Like, the Zodiac Killer was around prior to this, and Ted Bundy, and, you know, like, it was just a really, really tense time in America. Very tense. And then on top of it being extremely tense, this is a Bible Belt town where three boys have just been murdered. So, just so we're aware, the Satanic Panic actually will have a lot of importance in this case. And then, I'm not going to talk about it now, but I do have to remember to talk about Aaron Hutcherson's police interview, because he, at first, testifies against the three boys that are convicted, and then he recants his statement later. So we'll talk about that when we actually talk about the court case, because we're going to talk about interviews later on when we talk about the court case, like the interview where there's actually a confession, this interview, and then an interview with Vicki Hutcherson as well. But now we're going to switch gears a little bit. Hopefully, I'm sorry, guys, that we had to do that, but I had to go into detail about what happened. But hopefully now we can get away from that, and I don't cry, and it's not awful. Because now we're going to talk about horrible police work. Bad police work. Awful. So the first person we're going to talk about is Jason Baldwin. So Jason Baldwin got on the police first knew about Jason Baldwin because he went to this, like, I don't know, scrapyard, basically Mill Iron. Like, you know, you go out to Mill Iron and you can pull parts and stuff.
You know, like a scrapyard.
I'm trying to give you a first-hand. Your dad's into tractors, and you're telling me you don't know what I'm talking about when I say Mill Iron. Like, stop.
I just described it as a scrapyard.
But, basically, Jason and a couple of his friends were out there busting windows out of cars that were at this scrapyard, right?
Fun times.
So the police arrest him, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing, boy? Gets in trouble, right? And his mother works nights. It's also said that his mother had schizophrenia. Like I said, some of these things I got strictly from Stephanie Harlow's videos, and I couldn't find anything to corroborate it, but according to her research, Jason Baldwin's mother has schizophrenia. And when you look at her, it looks as if she's done drugs. And that's not a dig at her appearance, but you know what I'm saying. Like, her teeth are really jagged, her cheeks are really sunken, like, it looks like she might have had a drug problem at some point. I don't know if she still looks like that today, but when you look at the filming of the Paradise Lost, like, the parts that she's in, she looks like she might have done drugs. No shade. But
drugs are bad, okay?
Drugs are bad!
Shouldn't do drugs, okay?
So, because his mother worked nights and was dealing with a lot of issues, and sometimes she wouldn't come home at night or she wouldn't come home for days even, he took care of his younger siblings. He would do everything for them. He was basically like their parental figure. He wore black concert tees. He had like Davy-ish color hair, so like kind of dirty blonde hair. And he wore it really, really long, and he was 16 at the time of this all happening. Jesse Miss Kelly was 17, and he had an extremely low IQ. Like, his IQ was so low that I would almost say he had special needs. And that's not a dig at him or a dig at anybody who has special needs, but he was not functioning at the mental level that a 17-year-old would function at. The reason that his name is brought to police attention is because he wanted to build a racetrack in his backyard, and he stole some color guard flags, because every racetrack needs flags. Like, do you see what I'm getting at? He's not functioning at a typical 17-year-old level.
Sounds like he just likes racetracks.
What's 17-year-old? Never mind. Nothing. It's mentioned, and it is also, like, when you listen to him speak in the court case and stuff, he's got an extremely low IQ, like, and I shouldn't say special needs, but his IQ is extremely low, very low. So, don't know if I want to use the word special needs. I mean, I already did, but I don't know if I want to really stick by that or if I really want to use that word, but his IQ was very, very low. And he dropped out of high school at some point. I don't know when, but he did drop out of high school. he also is very trusted with the neighborhood children, just like Jason. So Jason and Jesse are both very trusted with the neighborhood children. Now, they did not know Stevie and Michael and Chris because they lived on the side of town that was super poor. And if you ask Damien, that's why what happened to them happened. Damian Eccles is the next person we're going to talk about. See, remember I said we're going to talk about Damian later? Damian Eccles. Uh-huh. Damian's my favorite.
Your favorite?
He is. He's... There's just so much information on him, and I don't relate to him now, nor do I connect with him or what he's doing in today's world, but I can relate to a kid who wrote down Metallica quotes in a notebook and read Stephen King when it wasn't popular, like when people thought it was super creepy to read horror books in a Bible Belt town, you know, divorced parents. Like, I can relate to him in some ways, and I think that's why he's my favorite. Like, I love talking about Damian. Today, in today's world, he's into, like, alchemy and, you know, actually some, like, magic type stuff, but he has never claimed to be a Satanist or a Wiccan. He just looks at himself as a spiritual person, from what I can understand in today's world. Damian also has a book, if you guys are interested in a little bit more information about Damian's life. And that's where some of this information is coming from. Stephanie, one of my main sources, got a lot of her information from Damian's book. And I got a lot of my information from a lot of his interviews. I watched a lot of his interviews leading up to this. Because there's some things that we're going to talk about that are going to be a little bit weird to talk about. But are corroborated by things that he said in interviews. Like the level of poverty that he lived under. This kid was extremely poor. Like, there were some times that his family was literally living in, like, shacks. They didn't have electricity or running water. And they would have to go, like, down the street to a neighbor's house to get water out of a, like, hose spigot and bring it home and boil it and pour it into a tub and take baths, you know? Like, that's how they did it, because they were just so incredibly poor. But Damian Eccles' worst enemy is Jerry Driver. And Jerry Driver is a, like a juvenile parole officer type deal, right? But he did change his name. His name was originally Michael. He changed his name to Damian because if you ask him, and actually he says this in the court case, I'll see if I can find the clip for the next episode. But, he changed his name to Damian because he went to a Catholic church, and one of the people that they learned about was Father Damian, who took care of lepers, and he thought that that name was super cool. He thought that the guy was super cool, so he changed his name to Damian because Damian sounded cooler than Michael, which it does, you know? I mean, if I was named Michael and I had the option to change my name to Damian, I'd probably change my name to Damian. Would you change your name to Damian?
Probably not.
Probably not. I think Damian's a cool name. I think that Damian's a really cool name.
I kind of see it, let's see, the Omen, I believe.
A lot of people...
devil child was Damian.
A lot of people speculated that, and he was actually asked in court, does it have anything to do with the Omen? Does it have anything to do with horror movies or Stephen King or Aleister Crowley or anything like that? Because apparently, Aleister Crowley. And knowing anything about Aleister Crowley is a reason to be considered guilty of a crime that you didn't commit. Okay. But, like, they were like, does it have anything to do with this movie, or Aleister Crowley, or Stephen King, or all of these things that they thought were wrong? And he was like, no, this is what it is. Like I said, I'll find the clip. But, parents divorced at a young age. The only person that he was close to was his nanny, who was his maternal grandfather, or maternal grandmother. And he said that for a long time he felt like she was the only person, the only adult he could trust. Stay awake over there. But at some point his parents get divorced, and his mother remarries to a man named Jack Eccles. And Jack Eccles legally adopts Damian, and that's why Damian's name is then changed to Damian Eccles. I can't remember what his last name was originally, but that's why his name is Damian Eccles, because Jack Eccles adopted him. And Jack Eccles is extremely religious and also super abusive. This guy's a dog puncher, everybody! Like, he would be praying, I guess, like, you know how you kneel down and pray on your bed? And if the dog was, like, digging at the bed, he'd, like, punch her to knock her down off the bed. Like, this guy's a dog puncher. How do you feel about dog punchers?
I never really thought about it.
It was like, I didn't know people punch dogs, but apparently there's dog punchers. And he also really, really bullied Damien, but Damien doesn't have any ill will towards Jack Eccles, at least not from what I can tell from his interviews and everything. I guess he was super supportive of Damien, like, getting his ears pierced and wearing his hair long and painting his nails and letting Damien express himself, which is, I think, super cool, because obviously his mother... He says that his mother was a drama queen. And, like, later on, he will talk about how he gets put in some mental institutions, and Damien says that she used to, like, freak out that he was going to hurt himself. And he was like, it wasn't really concerned. She's a drama queen. She doesn't like to be bored. So if there's nothing going on, she'll make something go on. Like, I think Damien was, like, pouring Kahlua in milk so that he could take a nap or something, because he hadn't been sleeping well. And... he, like, his sister caught him and was like, Damien's being sneaky in the kitchen. And his mom was on the phone and was like, I think Damien's gonna hurt himself. And Damien was like, she's fucking psycho. Like, really? But, anyway. Yeah. This is, Damien. And I don't know, maybe it's because we have more information about Damien that, like, I really like Damien as, like, I don't know. I feel like he's a character. And, like, I don't know, sometimes when I'm watching, like, really horrifying cases like this one, I try to make them not feel as real, and so I think of them as something that, like, didn't happen, but, like, an episode on, like, a TV show, and, like, if this was a TV show, Damien would be, like, my favorite character. Already decided. So Jerry Driver has it out for Damien, right? Like... he, like, oh, I don't even know what sparks it, but he, like, questions Damien several times about the occult and, like, demons and devil worship and things that Damien doesn't know about, honestly, you know? He's like, what do you know about devil worship? And Damien's like, listen, buddy, I don't know anything, you know? So, this Jerry Driver guy, bad guy. Don't really like Jerry Driver. Damien attempts to run away, which I think is how he meets Jerry Driver. Like, he attempts to run away with his girlfriend at the time or something like that. This is, and again, a lot of this information is information that I'm getting from Stephanie Harlow's video. And it felt like important information, but not for what we're getting at, which is why the case is unsolved, right? So, like, Damien was dating this chick, and... they decided that they were going to run away. They had broken up, and then they got back together, and they were like, let's run away, right? So they run away, and they sleep in this trailer, and that's how Damien meets Jerry Driver, because they get arrested for running away, which is kind of weird. Like, I don't know if runaways get arrested on a regular basis, but, I mean, most runaways just get dropped back off at home, and they're like, fucking stay there, you know? Like... I don't know why these kids were handcuffed and taken out and put in police cruisers and shit, you know. Not normal, but whatever. But, this is when he meets Jerry Driver. And Jerry Driver's like, what do you know about devil worship? What do you know about Satanism? I know there's devil worship in West Memphis, and I think you're behind it, and you need to tell me. And Damien's like, I don't know anything. And then Jerry Driver pulls out this notebook that technically belongs to Damien's girlfriend because she was, like, a secret Wiccan, right? And he's like, this is your notebook. And I think he didn't really want to throw his chick under the bus, you know? Even though she breaks up with him as soon as Jerry Driver insinuates that he might be involved in devil worship. Like, she didn't know this guy better than that, whatever. But, she... is like a secret Wiccan and has this notebook, and Damien's like, that's not my notebook. And Jerry Driver's like, I know it's your notebook, and you're gonna tell me what you know about devil worship. So, like, poor Damien's just having a time over here. And when Damien refuses to give up any information, Damien's put into a mental hospital, because that's what we do when somebody doesn't give the information that we want. We put them in a mental hospital. Is that what you do when you don't get the information that you want? You put people in mental hospitals?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's always my go-to. It's like, what do you mean you don't have cream for my coffee? Hospital.
Hospital.
Psycho.
Psycho. No Santa cream Silo. For my coffee.
You're going to Arkham. Sure. Is that not what everybody does? I don't understand.
Is the Joker your barista? Like, shit!
Yes.
So he gets sent to this mental asylum. And then because Damien's mom is apparently a fucking ray of sunshine of a woman, she lets a cop into her 18-year-old son's bedroom. She just, like, the cop's like, hey, I want to look in your son's room. And she's like, okay, sure. And she just lets him in and lets him take Damien's things. Like, he takes a journal and, like, some skulls that Damien had around his room and stuff. And, like, you know, Dara's stepson loves skulls. Like, his room had, like, a skull decal on it before, like, she repainted the room. Like, it's not uncommon for teenage boys to like skulls. You know, I like skulls, and I'm a fucking girl. Like, I don't understand. Like, Davey wants to get a whole tattoo of, like, an Indian skull with, like, a Native American headdress on it. Like, it's not that uncommon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
like,
back then, in the 90s, they just automatically thought that was evil.
Skulls?
Evil!
Skulls? Fucking Satan worshiper. That's what he is. Like, is that really what it was like back then?
Evil!
I don't get it.
That's people who like skulls.
Oh, that's people who like skulls?
Evil!
Oh, I thought you were saying evil a certain way that I was supposed to get.
No, just evil. It's just...
It sounds like the way that Mermaid Man off of SpongeBob says evil.
Mermaid Man stole that from
me. From you?
I've been saying that for years.
Okay.
Screw you, Mermaid Man.
Got you. So he just takes Damien's things and, like, his mother just lets him do that, which, I don't know if I was a mother, if I would just let some random guy, who's not even technically a cop, he's a juvenile parole officer, and he just wants to come into my son's room and take shit. Like, I don't know if I'm down for that. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, give me a warrant to go into my son's room and steal his shit. He's 18. Fuck off, you know? It is what it is, but whatever. And I don't think he was 18 at this time. He might have even been younger, like 16. When he first meets Jerry Driver. I don't remember specifically, but, like, a 16-year-old, you're letting a parole officer go into your 16-year-old son's bedroom. You have a 16-year-old kid. Would you let a cop into your 16-year-old's bedroom?
I don't have a 16-year-old kid.
Well, he's 17. But
17-year-old kid.
Would you let, when he was 16, would you have just let some cop go into his room and take whatever the fuck he wanted? That's not even a cop. He's a parole officer, not even a cop.
I mean, I traditionally comply with the popo.
Call the popo, ho.
call the popo.
You don't, you've never seen Medea, so you don't get that,
reference.
But there's a movie where she's like, call the popo, ho, and she's like, if I call the cops, they'll be here in 10 minutes, and Medea's like, then that gives me 9 to whoop your ass. I was like, wow.
I've never watched the Medea movies.
I'm gonna make him watch it, guys.
No.
Making him watch it.
They look absolutely terrible.
They're so fucking good. If you're not racist, they're great. They're little gold mines.
So, wait. Are you implying because I don't want to watch fucking Medea, I'm racist?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, if you're a racist person. The movie's full of black people. Like, there's very few white people in Medea movies. Very few. Like, if you're a racist person, you're probably going to have a hard time watching that. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the main characters are black. The protagonist is black. You know, they're all black. They're all black.
I don't give a shit how black they are.
Well, that's
I
not, just I'm think not saying,
they don't. It just doesn't sound like a funny movie.
I'm not saying you specifically are racist. I'm saying, like, if you're the kind of racist that, like, doesn't like black people and you try to watch a Medea movie, you're gonna have a bad time.
You're gonna have a bad time. It's like, damn it. I wanted to watch this movie. It's supposed to be a comedy, but damn it, everyone's black. This is terrible.
This is terrible.
I can't laugh at these jokes. They're black. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Don't tell my wife.
Don't tell my wife.
I have a reputation to uphold at hating black people.
This guy's in the Klan. He's like, I'm just gonna, for research purposes, I'm gonna watch this movie.
The KKK have movie nights and they're like, let's watch Madea. I killed that motherfucker. I killed that motherfucker. I just beat these bastards.
I mean, it's really funny because, like, Madea would probably challenge them. Like, Madea carries a gun on her at all times and she, like, just waves it around. She's like, yeah, it's got a gun. And, like, I feel like that would scare some KKK members. You know what I'm saying? Like, they really don't like to be challenged. They're like, we just want to be racist with no repercussions. And now she's in the box. Okay.
Damn it, I hate it when these black people, you know, fight back.
Fight back!
How dare them? Don't they know that I'm a white man?
Sorry, guys. I don't know where this has gone. Back on topic. So Damien says that his mother was a drama queen. We've already said that before, and I think that's... If the story is true, this is all Damien's story, but if the story about her just letting a parole officer... Because that's the thing. Like, it would be different if two cops showed up to my door and was like, hey, we have reason to believe that your son's involved in this. Do you mind if we come in and take a look around? I'd probably feel differently. But this guy's a parole officer. He's not a police officer. He can't get a warrant. He can't arrest my kid. So why the fuck do you need to go into his bedroom? And why the fuck do you need to take his shit?
Maybe she just didn't think her son was... She thought her son was innocent, so...
I mean, yeah.
Do what you gotta do.
You can think your son's innocent and let the parole officer into his bedroom, but you're not leaving my house with any of my son's things that I paid for unless you have a fucking warrant.
I mean...
My fucking property, get the fuck out of my house.
Fighting might make you seem more suspicious. I mean...
I'm black. I'm already suspicious. Sorry. I had to say it.
What? What? I am doing a podcast with a black person? Cancel it now. Cancel it now. Oh, I need to go back to my KKK meeting.
You gotta go back into the KKK cave.
The cake. Don't make it sound cool. No. Oh, it's the KKK phone.
Sorry, guys. I don't know where this is going.
Men, we have another black person trying to eat at a restaurant. A white restaurant.
Like, you gotta think, man. Like, if it's the KKK, like, they probably have an entrance like Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy from SpongeBob. Sorry. Okay, I'm done. I swear to God, I'm done. Sorry, guys. Ugh. I mean, they were probably also racist in this town because it's a little Bible Belt town, so, you know. So, at some point, Damien is getting ready to be put in another mental hospital because that's all they do to this kid is put him in fucking mental hospitals. Like, dear God. I would lose my shit if I was sent to a mental hospital 3 times, and each time they let me go because they had no reason to keep me. But anyway, at some point, Damien's getting ready to be put into a mental hospital again, and his father's there because his mother and his father are rekindling their relationship, I guess, which is stupid, but whatever. And his father's like, you gotta start living your life, son, and doing things the right way, and living by God, and, you know, following the law.
You have an issue with people rekindling their relationship?
No, I feel like...
Fuck old love!
These two people were bad for each other. I've rekindled my love with somebody before. Yes, I'm only 20, but it has happened. But these people are bad for each other. Like, literally this man divorced his wife because he felt like less of a man because they were poor. I feel like that's not a reason to divorce your family. Or, you know, divorce your wife and leave your kids.
But you're very judgmental.
I don't think it's fair. Listen, and I'm just going to put it to you like this. I don't think it's fair to make your kids suffer and decide you're not going to see them and you're not going to have anything to do with them. Because, and you're going to move to another state and try a different marriage because your marriage didn't work out and you didn't have a good enough job and you were poor. So that just made you feel like less of a man. So you were going to go try all over again.
Well, I didn't know he did all that. You just said he divorced a woman because he felt like he wasn't a man.
No, he took a couple.
People are young and stupid
sometimes. He took a couple more stabs at it before he realized that, you know, Pam, Damien's mom, was probably the best he was going to get. He was like, all these other bitches are ugly.
She's the best.
Damn it!
Around. Nothing's ever going to keep her down.
I'm sorry that you guys just had to hear that. So Damien says in response to his father telling him to shapen up, he says, "I'll eat you alive." And people took that to mean, I'm like, I'm going to eat you alive. Like, I'm going to cook you and eat you type situation, which is not what Damien meant, I don't think. It was probably more of a situation like that I've been through with my dad.
A figure of speech, perhaps?
Exactly. Like, I've said something similar to my dad before because, like, my dad split up with my mom and I'm like, I've lived through something that you crumbled under. You know, I lived through my parents fighting all the time. And I have mental health issues, and I have PTSD, and I have all of these things going on, and I've lived through it, and I'm better because I've pushed myself past all of this. And yes, I'm still learning, and yes, I'm still working, but who are you to tell me how to live my life, and you couldn't even deal with one situation? I feel like that's more of where he was going, and less than a, I'm gonna fucking rip your guts out type, you know? You know. So, at some point, he says that to his father, right? And then the hospital releases him again in 2 weeks. And then he goes back a third time. Like, he goes back to West Memphis. His family has moved to, like, Kansas or something. I don't know. They're living somewhere else. And he's like, I'm going to go back to West Memphis. Y'all are fucking crazy. I'm going to go back home. Jason, my best friend, is there. You know, Dominie, who later will have his child, is there, who was not the girlfriend that we talked about him running away with, but this is a girl that he has a child with. You know, Dominie's there, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back home, right? Which is understandable. So he goes home. Immediately, Jerry Driver's on his ass and arrests him, or has him arrested, because he can't arrest anybody because he's a parole officer. But he has Damien arrested because it's against the law as a minor to not be living with your parents, which is bullshit. It's bullshit. I don't even care. Like, that's not a law. That's literally not a law. Children live away from their parents all the time. Like, no, he wasn't emancipated, but then, like, they wouldn't let him enroll in school because his parents weren't there to sign him up, which is stupid because he was 18, I think, at this time. And so they were like, nope, you just can't come to school anymore. And they, so he has to, like, get his GED, and he spends a lot of his time reading Stephen King in the library, which, of course, Jerry Driver has to feed off of more. Because why would it be normal for somebody to read Stephen King? I just,
if that is a way to be guilty, I am guilty as sin.
Guilty as sin. I feel it. He then goes back to a mental institution. He's there for 2 weeks once again before they release him. And then Jerry Driver questions him again about cults. And I think, honestly, that's where we're going to stop. Because everything after this is actually getting into the court case, which is what we're going to be talking about in the next episode. I really just wanted to do this episode to give you a little bit of background, and then we'll talk about the court case and the horrible fucking police work at the court case, too. So, I think we'll end it here.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like to say?
This is all terrible. Very terrible.
It's horrendous.
These poor, sweet little children.
Yeah.
Innocent little scamps.
Innocent little scamps. Are you what? Are you an old man? You're gonna... Innocent little scams. You whippersnappers. Get off my lawn.
I don't need you judging me.
He's old, guys. He's gonna be waving his cane at whippersnappers next. It's going to happen.
And they need to get off my damn lawn.
It's happening. It's happening.
All right. Well, plug your pluggables.
Plug your what of what?
Your pluggables.
Oh, my pluggables. Sorry, guys. It's 2 a.m. here, and I'm really tired. So if you guys would like to give us some information that you have on the case, or if you guys would like to give us any feedback, you can always follow us on the official Unsolved Mysteries Instagram page, as well as Steven's Dragon Blazer Production.
Unsolved Comedies.
Oh. It's Unsolved _ Comedies. I don't know why I said that, but it's Unsolved _ Comedies is the Instagram page. And then Steven's official Dragon Blazer Production Instagram page and Facebook page.
Twitter at Dragon Blazer Pro, and then I also have a YouTube page where I've been slowly putting on all my podcasts on the YouTubes.
Yeah, you guys can check out some of his other podcasts on the YouTubes. He's got a couple of wrestling podcasts and a game review podcast, and our podcast, of course.
And I also do little game videos for fun.
Yeah, for fun. So
for funsies.
Check out the YouTube channel. In fact, I think we actually have a Zoom call episode up there. So if you guys want to go watch that.
It's the one where I hijacked.
He hijacked. So if you guys want to, you can go watch that and see what our faces actually look like. Since you guys have like never seen
that. I know.
That.
And I had no idea she was black people. No idea.
No idea. Even though I mentioned it in the Alonzo Brooks case. But he had no idea.
Or, you know. I also am literally looking at you across the table.
Across go the back table. To your KKK. Get out of here.
You know, KKK needs love too. No, they don't. Fuck you, KKK.
I'm sorry. If we have any KKK members, you can leave now.
You know what? If we have KKK members listening, fuck you.
Bye.
I'm sorry. Normally, I apologize when we alienate people. Not KKK members.
I mean, I don't
you
feel like we
hate
have any
black people because the color of their skin. You can fuck right off.
I mean, to be fair, I have said I'm black like three times, so we've probably
already alienated any KKK members. My God, we've been listening to a black woman. Shut it off, kids. Shut that podcast off. She is podcasting while black. How dare her?
How dare she?
Fucking.
Sorry, guys. The cats are more active now, so we probably actually will stop this before you guys get bombarded with cat noise. Thank you guys for listening.
And don't be on the next episode of Unsolved Mysteries.